Can't hear myself.
Oh, really?
Hello?
I can hear you. I think it's your headphone.
Can you turn on my headphones? Hello? Oh, I can hear myself now. Yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can.
I'm Micah.
I'm DJ Dreamfield. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, our sponsors, or the University of California. Real quick, we want to give a quick shout out to the UC Davis encampment.
Shout out.
Check out their info if you'd like. UCD Pulp on Instagram. I think they're pretty good on supplies. The only thing they need right now are camping pads.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in supporting the student intifada, feel free to, you know, check out info if you want to camp with them, you know, stuff like that. You want to keep supporting, then please. They also have a Venmo where you can make donations, stuff like that. But yeah, that it's an awesome thing to do. What they're doing is super important, far bigger than any of us, and we should all do what we can.
If you'd like to
I think it is good to personally do as much as I can to support this.
Wow.
But that's just me. You do what you would like. But
beautifully said, DJ Drainfield.
It's a good cause, no?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Cool.
This is Cirque de Soleiman. We're missing a guest.
Radio Raheem.
They're MIA. Don't know where they are.
I don't think he knows that this is happening right now.
Yeah, I don't think he remembers the show is
He also
right
probably
now.
Hasn't tapped in on the book.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's read the book. I also haven't seen him since last night, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know where he's at.
He texted me at 2:30, about 2 hours ago.
Oh.
It was like a meme. let me
He's,
read out the meme.
Please read out the meme in his honor.
Yep. Let's see. I'll make sure it's a. Oh, it's a Yasin Bey lyric that I actually cannot read on air.
Oh, wait, can I read this?
Yeah, you
well,
can.
Not on
read
air,
it.
But.
Yeah, see.
It's fire.
Definitely can't read that on air. But Radio Raheem, wherever you are in the ether, hope you're doing well.
Yeah. Today's book. Well, should we explain? On the show, we read books
yes.
every other week, and we talk about them.
We didn't do one for fundraiser.
It's true.
We started with The Essential Roomie.
Yeah.
But this book was supposed to be, or last week, or 2 weeks ago, was supposed to be The Temple of the Golden Pavilion. We pushed it back for fundraiser. But unfortunately, we both got preoccupied with some pretty intense stuff.
Yeah.
Lately. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
I wonder.
Yeah, and so we haven't been on our A game with reading, truthfully.
Yeah.
But we still have both read, you know, like about 3 chapters each.
Yeah.
You've read more, like 4 or 5 now?
Yeah, I don't remember how many chapters, because in this book, did we say the book Temple of the Golden Pavilion by Yukio Mishima?
Yeah,
it's like not named or anything. So I just go past it. I don't even like look
gotcha.
At it. But I'm on page 103.
Okay.
So, yeah. Which is, like, almost halfway.
Yeah. No, not even, actually. It's 260 pages.
I said almost.
Oh,
I didn't
almost.
Say.
True.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, my bad. No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. I'm wrong.
No, it's okay. It's okay. My bad.
Yeah. I think, like, honestly, I was more interested in just talking about Mishima.
Me too.
Rather than just like the book specifically anyway. So I think it's okay. Like, I think I have enough material to work off of right now to get into it. So let's give a setup. Mm-hmm. We have a main character. His name is Mizoguchi.
It's true.
And he is like kind of like a priest in training. He used to live in like a city or a different city. What's it called?
Oh, I forget.
Starts with an N, right?
Not Nagasaki. No. Okay, that's the only N one I know.
Let me flat my book up.
I don't remember.
No, I just remember them saying it in the book. So.
Shut up. This is new job as instrumentals in the background, by
Naryu,
the way.
Naryu. N-A-R-I-U. Basically, his father owned a temple there when we're introduced, but his father is also very sick. And, you know, he dies pretty early on. Like, first chapter, maybe? Like, he dies at the end of the first chapter? Maybe the second?
Yeah, like,
oh, sorry. Spoiler warning. But
oh,
like,
yeah, spoiler warning.
You're not
he dies, like, a few pages in, like...
Yeah, you're not going to get spoilers past, like, the first five or six chapters, so I wouldn't be super worried, listeners.
Also, I want to say, we can't... I feel like, at least... There's a lot of parts... Oh, my God, I can't speak. There's a lot of parts of this book that I feel like we can't really talk about on air.
Which
or at
place?
Least, like, later on for me, I don't know. There's, like, some things that happen. So, like, I don't know
like
if we're
like, I haven't read it yet?
No, like... I don't think it's suitable for air. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, like the stuff with his mom?
Yeah. Like, I also, there's some stuff he talks about later on in the book where it's like, I can't talk about that on air.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah.
We can give the broad explanation.
Yeah.
But yeah, his father dies and he leaves his normal school. He has a stutter, by the way, and he gets bullied hard.
Yeah.
But he's low-key crazy, right?
He is a little crazy. He's a little evil, as there's one would say.
There's a girl named Yuiko, right? That was her
name? Yeah, Yuiko.
And I don't even remember how she, like, embarrassed him.
I also don't remember.
I don't even think he, like, elaborates on it, really.
No, I feel like they don't really go into depth. But, like, this is somebody...
Like, it's just a girl. Like,
yeah,
a girl
just a girl.
Age,
but, like, she leaves,
kids.
Like, an impression on him because he mentions her later on, too. Like,
yeah.
Again, multiple times.
And then he's, like, something happens. Like, it's pretty vague what happens. But basically, he feels very embarrassed by it. I think it has to do with his stutter. Oh, you know what? She kind of, like, belittles him. I think she's, like, scared at first. And she's like, oh, it's just you, a stutterer.
Oh.
And so he's, like, from that day forth. And this is, like, no exaggeration. From that day forth, he wished for her death every single day.
Yeah, oh, my God.
And then shortly after it happened, she actually died. He, like, prayed on her death. And so he was just, like, from that day forward, like, I was, like, convinced I had, like, I had the power of, like, what's it called? Manifestation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was just, like, if I wanted something bad enough, I really believed I could make it happen. Because Yuiko died because I wanted her to die. Because she embarrassed me for my stutter.
He's crazy.
And so he later moves to, after his father's death, he moves to Kyoto. Because he needs to continue his, like, priest training. He's a Buddhist priest, so, like, maybe, like, more monk-like than anything else. Also, bear in mind, we're reading a translated version. These are not the words of Mishima. So, phrasing, stuff like that, how we interpret things, may not be exactly as they were meant to be interpreted. But I feel like probably a good translation. This seems like the most popular version of the book that I've seen. Anyway, he goes to Kyoto to go into, like, priest training at this temple, but his dad's a big fan of this temple. Do you want to talk about that?
The Temple of the Golden Pavilion? Oh my gosh.
Or it's really just the Golden Temple.
Well, the Golden Temple,
yeah.
But yeah, no, he enters, like, his training or whatever.
Wait, before that.
Oh.
How does, what his dad kind of hypes it up for him, right?
He does. I don't really remember.
Okay.
I read half of this book, like, a couple weeks ago, and then I read the other half.
I can set it up. So even when he was living in Naryu, his dad would always tell him, because his dad's also a priest, or was a priest, he would always tell him, like, the Golden, like, Temple is the most beautiful place in the world. Like, there's really nothing on this earthly plane like it. Like, best thing ever. Then his dad, like, dies, and he goes to the Golden Temple, and he's like, whoa, this is it? Like, whatever. But then he, like, looks in the reflection of the water facing the temple, and he sees the reflection of the temple, and he's like, wait, maybe this is really beautiful. And so he becomes, like, obsessed with the temple, basically. But now you can get back into it. him working at the temple and all that.
Oh yeah, so he starts working there. He's young also, by the way. He's like 17 mm-hmm. at this moment in time. He meets this guy, what's his
Surukawa.
And like that becomes like his only friend really.
And I think he takes on a really interesting role in his life because he functions as like his interpreter.
Yeah, I know. I bookmarked this, but I don't remember. I have so many tabs in this book.
I'm gonna pull it up too. I read it pretty recently, so I feel like I can find it more easily.
Oh, he also says, "I knew instinctively that this boy would not love the Golden Temple as I did about Surukawa."
Okay, like he's obsessed. I have a good one on the interpreter thing. Uh-huh. Surukawa was invariably interpreting my behavior and was invariably mistaken about it, but he did not bother me in the slightest and had in fact become indispensable, for he was truly my well-intentioned interpreter, an irreplaceable friend who could translate my words for me into the language of the real world. Yes, Surukawa sometimes seemed to me like an alchemist who could transform tin into gold. I was the negative of the picture, he was the positive. How often had I not been amazed to see how my dark, turbid feelings could become clear and radiant by being filtered through Surukawa's heart. While I hesitated and stuttered, he would take my feelings in his hand, turn them around, and transmit them to the outside world. What I learned from this amazing process was that so far as feelings were concerned, there was no discrepancy between the finest feeling in this world and the very worst. That their effect was the same. That no visible difference existed between murderous intent and feelings of deep compassion.
Wow. Oh, our background music stopped.
We have to sing
it. The freak. Oh, there you go.
Okay. I think their dynamic is really, really cool because Mizuguchi is like super negative. And we can talk about more like Mishima's themes of this later. Because I think like, you know, if the listeners have read Yukio Mishima before, you will likely be familiar. He's a pretty negative, like pessimistic, cynical guy in a lot of his works.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like a self-insert a lot of regards. Like, he as a person was a very unhappy man, you know? Mm-hmm. I'll let you cook on this one.
Oh, I was gonna say before that, or not before that. There's also a thing with his mother. He does not like her. He does not love her.
Hates her.
He says multiple times that he hates her.
He doesn't even mention her until the third chapter.
Yeah.
And he explicitly is like, the reason why I haven't mentioned my mother thus far is because I do not like her.
Yeah. And he only mentions her because she goes to visit him at the temple.
Yeah. She brings like his father's like tablet or something to get it like prayed over by.
It's like the anniversary of his death, I believe.
Yeah. What's the priest's name? Like Father Dosen or something?
Oh my, I think so.
The priest of the Golden Temple? Yeah.
But yeah, he hates his mother, which I feel like is another common Mishima theme, mm-hmm. we'll say. So he says, it would not be an exaggeration to say that I did not want to see mother in the slightest. Mm-hmm. It was not that I had no feeling for her. The fact was probably that I disliked being confronted with a straightforward expression of love that one receives from one's blood relatives. And that I was simply trying to rationalize this dislike in various ways. Therein lay my bad character. But yeah, he really hates his mother. She also does something that causes his stutter.
We can describe it. Basically, he's in, like, his parents and him shared a bed in Naryu. His father is very sick. And then one night and they have someone else stay with them, and because they only had one bed, they stayed in the bed with the three others, and he's awakened in the middle of the night to his mother engaging in infidelity while he and his father were supposed to be sleeping, but they were both awake, aware of this happening, and his father just covers his eyes because he was so sick and couldn't really do anything about it.
And it's kind of an interesting scene too, because he describes like his father covering his eyes, and like he understands immediately what's happening, and he sort of nods into his father's hands, and then his father lets his like takes his hands off his eyes, and he just never opens his eyes again until the morning. And then later on about his father's death, he says, "Please remember that with his death, I was freed from the fetters of his hands."
Yep.
And that now by looking intently at his face, I was able to confirm my own existence.
Crazy,
very crazy. TBH, I think I would also hate my mother if that happened.
No, that seems really awkward.
Seems really reasonable, to be honest, for him to hate her. Yeah. But what else happens?
Yeah, and she does she know that he knows? No, right?
They never mention, like, if she knows that he knows.
He just probably, like, stopped talking to her after that.
I assume so. But yeah, his mother comes. He's also embarrassed of her because she's poor.
Yeah.
And that's something he
and
talks
ugly
about.
Too.
Yeah, and ugly. He calls her ugly. Which is kind of mean, but you know, she caused his stutter.
There's like a line where he says, like, even if she like covered herself in makeup, like it couldn't fix her.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I think the Mishima theme of like hating moms is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I feel like in Confessions of a Mask, the other Mishima book I've read, I'd felt like he was ambivalent towards both of his parents.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, I feel like Mizuguchi doesn't necessarily, like, he's not like obsessed with his father, but he like respects his father because he doesn't seem super moved by his death, right?
Yeah.
But he at least like respects him and like thinks him relatively positively, but hates his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what Mishima's relationship was with his mom growing up, but like he loves. I would assume bad as well.
So Confessions of a Mask is kind of like a like semi-autobiography. So Mishima growing up also was taken more like care of like by his grandmother,
mm-hmm.
as like similar to the main character of Confessions of a Mask.
Yeah.
So I feel like that probably alludes to something, you know?
Got you.
But yeah, also this takes place during World War II.
I feel like most Mishima books do, no?
Yeah, that's I think he did most of his writing around that time anyways, yeah. Which is why it takes place. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, and then, okay, yeah. So he becomes a student, and then his mother visits him. And he starts, it takes place during World War II, and he starts, like, having to work at, a factory,
mm-hmm.
During the war, with,
Is this Confessions of a Mask or Temple?
No, this is Temple of the Golden Pavilion.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so he starts working at a factory because it's, like, mandated, you know, like, they all
yeah,
have to
I
do
Yeah, I was like,
work,
I don't remember
whatever.
This in Confessions of a Mask. I was tripping for a second.
No,
yeah.
Also, in Confessions of a Mask, he does have to work
in a factory?
Yeah, he goes to work in a factory as well.
Oh, wow. I read it a while ago.
It's okay. I forgive you. Anyways, yeah, he goes to work in a factory, and he is not able to see the temple as often as he usually does. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, a whole scene where, like, before he starts going to work in the factory, he makes Tsurukawa, is that his name?
Tsurukawa, yeah.
Tsurukawa, like, stop while, so he can admire and, like, stare at the temple because he doesn't know when he'll be able to see it at that time again.
And he kind of picks up his father's obsession with it.
Yeah.
And there's a really interesting part where he discusses how, like, he almost hopes the Americans, like, firebomb the Golden Temple.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Because he sees himself as its, like, divine protector in a weird way. And, like, he described it as, like, when his mother was, like, the Americans aren't going to bomb Kyoto. Like, they're just going to leave it alone. Which is historically true. Like, there were discussions of, like, bombing Kyoto when they talked about, like, Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided against Kyoto because it was, like, such a historic city and they didn't want to destroy that culture. And so Kyoto was mostly left alone in military exercises. But, yeah, he describes it as, like, his purpose was lost when he found out the Americans, there was no chance for the, or it was like unlikely the Americans would bomb Kyoto and the Golden Temple.
Yeah. And then the war, this all happens like really quickly in the book, like within like a couple of pages. So then like the war ends and he describes like not really being bothered, not super bothered like other people were by the war ending. He says the country's defeat was for me just an experience of despair, but he doesn't really care too much. He mentions later, he doesn't say that verbatim, but you know what I mean. Yeah, what else? And then he goes on to like, okay, something I'm trying not to skip over. Yeah, he gets a little, Mishima books I feel like always get a little weird. So around like page 70, there's some interesting things that happen, and Yukiko is mentioned again. He fantasizes about her, in weird ways that I cannot describe on air.
Ew.
Yeah, all I want to see. Yeah, honestly, that describes it perfectly. Just ew. Yeah, so his obsession with Yukiko comes back, of course.
Yuiko, right? It's spelled
Yuiko. Yuiko.
Yeah.
My bad.
No, you're good. Just make sure. I didn't want to confuse it with a different character.
No.
Do you want to play our one message?
Sure.
And then get back into the review? We have 10 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Feel free to keep it locked to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM.
Bye.
Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts.
Imagine talking on air with underrepresented communities,
reviewing movies,
or even singing live karaoke. In case you're wondering, anyone is eligible.
And as you can tell, the possibilities are endless.
If you're interested, please email us at programming@kdvs.org.
We're back.
Hi. We need this.
Background music.
Okay.
Sorry, continue what you were saying. Weird fantasies about you.
Yeah, so I'm glad you didn't have to read this part because it's a little... Like I said, I feel like Mishima always throws in something weird every now and then.
Yeah, there's that... I don't know if you remember that one part in Confessions of a Mask.
There's a lot of weird parts in Confessions
of a Mask. No, the most weird part, I think, is, like, the one where he, like, describes, like, surgically removing the intestines of his classmate in a dream of his. He's like, oh, man, I wish that could happen. Like, bro.
Yeah, he's just a weird guy.
He is a weird guy. And I think that's why a lot of people like him, because I think he voices a lot of, like, kind of more depraved thoughts or, like, negative thoughts of, like, wishing death for yourself or others that, like, a lot of people don't really talk about. But I think why Mishima was, like, so popular, which is weird to say, is that he was kind of, like, the guy who just was like, yo, this is how I am. Yeah. Like, I'm crazy.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I've said this before, but Yukio Mishima is my favorite author of all time. And maybe, I don't know, I think I just really like his books.
My favorite author is Kentaro Miura. He did Berserk.
Fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Rick Riordan.
Oh, I love Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
I love Percy. Okay.
No, but I like Mishima a lot.
Yeah.
I can't say he's my favorite because I've only read one book from him.
I think I've read almost all of his books, I think, at this point.
Is this the last one left? Or?
No, there's a few... we're going off topic, but there's just like a few like plays and stuff that he has that like I never really got to.
Yeah,
but I will read them. And then he has like a trilogy that I need to finish.
Fire.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, but yeah, then fast forward to winter after the war. So the U.S. begins to occupy Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he's walking, and like people will pay to like go to this
temple
and like get tours or whatever like that, right?
Yeah.
They started doing this really often during the occupation to like make money for themselves and stuff like that, like as a tourist thing, because they knew like the Americans would pay for whatever.
It was a thing they'd done before, but it was like pretty unpopular during the war. Like Father Dosen makes mention,
but
folks not really coming by.
Yeah, but they also upped the prices because of inflation.
Makes sense.
But one day, This guy, he drives up in, like, a Jeep, I think is what they mentioned. Or not Jeep, it's, like, a car or something. And he gets out, and it's an American soldier, and he describes him as being, like, way bigger than the main character. I keep forgetting his name.
Mizuguchi.
Mizuguchi describes him as being, like, way bigger than him. And he gets out, and he's American. And then he yells at the car, like, get out. And then this lady comes out of the car, and he describes her as a prostitute. And she gets out. And they're both really drunk.
Mizuguchi?
No, the
two people in the car, the Americans.
No, only one of them's American.
Okay.
The
woman isn't.
The woman is not American. She's a Japanese prostitute, is what Mizuguchi says. And so, like, the American soldier makes, like, no fight about, like, paying for it, the tour or whatever. Yeah, so he, like, pays for it or whatever. And so Mizuguchi, like, starts, like, giving him, like, a tour.
Yeah.
Or like walking him down places or whatever, but the soldier he keeps like yelling at the woman, and they keep arguing or whatever, right? And so at one point Mizuguchi just like starts to walk away, or I think they start to walk away from him. Somebody starts to walk away from somebody, and then they start arguing like really bad, and he kind of like from what I remember, the soldier, he kind of, like, grabs the woman, and then, like, Mizuguchi, like, runs up to them, and he, like, throws her down until she, like, falls in. It's also snowing, so she falls, like, into the snow, whatever.
Yeah.
And this is where he gets very evil. The soldier tells him to kick her, and he does it. He starts, like, violently kicking her in the stomach.
Oh, my God.
As she's, like, laying on the ground. And he describes himself as, like, becoming evil, or, like, evil overtaking him, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
Not because of the book, but because of DJ Drainfield.
Yeah.
DJ Drainfield always makes jokes about being evil or whatever.
Yeah. Not in that way, though.
Not in that way, but, like, as in a silly way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he describes him. I wonder if I can find, like, the actual description.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, he just does it, and it's, like, what? And after he does it, the soldier just gives him, like, 2 packs of cigarettes for it.
Fire.
And it's
good trade.
Is it a good trade?
No, not good trade. Sorry. Yeah. Just kidding.
And so then he takes.
Not a good joke either.
He takes these cigarettes and he gives them to the superior because he knows that he loves cigarettes, right? And obviously it's post-war Japan. These aren't easy things to get.
Yeah.
And so after he gives him the cigarette, the superior takes a liking to him. Oh, Mizuguchi agrees to kicks her because he thinks that if he says no or defies the soldier, he's going to go after him instead.
Okay.
So that's why he does it.
He does it under duress, and then he gets really into it.
Yeah, as he's kicking her, he, like, starts to like it, basically. But then, so he gives him the cigarettes, and he gives the cigarettes to the superior because he knows that the superior likes cigarettes, and he's trying to get on his good side because he wants to take over the temple in the future.
Yeah.
And so after he gives him the cigarettes, it works, and the superior starts to, like, take a liking to him. And, like, he even, like, says he's going to send him to school.
Wow.
So he's chosen as, like, one of the people to go to this university. Mm-hmm. I forget the university's name at the moment.
The University of the Golden Temple. That's where we're going to go.
University of the Golden Temple.
UGT.
I think it's, like, Otani University, I believe, or something like that. Starts with an O. This is where he starts getting really weird. And also...
He's been weird.
No, but I mean, like, really weird.
Got
like,
you.
Obviously, he's been weird. Oh, also, I wanted to mention, I was going to talk about this. As he's kicking her, when he first sees her, he starts comparing her to
Yuiko.
Yuiko, oh my gosh, sorry. Yuiko, and that's what I'm saying. He's, like, really obsessed with her.
Yeah.
Like, and he says, he calls it, like, his first his very first experience of beauty. Yeah.
Even after she dies, he also sees, like, a grown woman and says, like, she looks like the face, like, she looked like Yuiko and all that. Like, he is very clearly obsessed with her even early on.
Yeah, so when he sees a lady, he said, I found a professional woman. This was the very first time that I had found a professional woman like this to be actually beautiful. It was not because she looked like Yuiko. She was like a portrait that had been drawn with the greatest care so as not to resemble Yuiko in any single feature. Yeah, and then he says this girl partook of a fresh, defiant beauty that somehow seemed to have come into being as a reaction to my memory of Yuiko. And then he says, and there was... Oh my god, I can't read. And there was something flattering in this resistance to those carnal feelings of mine that were the aftermath of my very first experience of beauty. She had only one point in common with Yuiko. This was that she did not so much as glance at me as I stood there. But yeah, he's still thinking about Yuiko, comparing the two together, of course. And then it turns out later on, after he's given, like, the superior the cigarettes or whatever, and, like, he's kind of become, like, a favorite of the superior.
Mm-hmm.
The other, like, students, I guess, are, like, in the temple.
Yeah.
Start to, like, dislike him because of it. Like, they know
even
that, like...
Surikawa?
No, not Surikawa. Like,
yeah,
besides Surikawa.
One.
Yeah, that's his real one. Besides Surikawa, they start to, like, dislike him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very evident in the way, like, they talk to him and, like, look at him or whatever like that. But also, I want to mention before we leave that the woman that he kicked in the stomach goes back to the temple later on, meets with the superior, and demands money because apparently she had a miscarriage because he kicked her so hard
so many times.
Yeah. And so the superior gives her money. Because he likes him so much, you know? Like, he's become his favorite, right? And then word gets around to all the students and stuff. And so...
That's not very priest-like.
Yeah. So he finds out... Mizuguchi finds out that everybody knows about that. because he can tell by the way they're looking at him differently. And then Tsurukawa tells him about that information. And it's really crazy. And then he lies to Tsurukawa, and he talks about how good it feels to lie to his friend for the first time.
Wow.
But yeah, that's where I left off, so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to Cirque du Soleil. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Again, feel free to check out UCD Pulp on Instagram if you'd like to support in any way. Up next, Dr. Andy's Technology and Poetry Hour.
Bye.
Now, this is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie, that is. And let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDBS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow. This is the Diz signing out.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, the radio show that for the last 24 years has aired right here on this campus and community radio station, radiating out at 9,800 watts to the entire Central Valley of California, with interviews mostly, interviews with poets and pundits, prognosticators, people who care about creativity, people who are working on fascinating multimedia projects. Such will be the case today with a great number of in-studio guests. We're going to talk today about the bike scavenger hunt that's coming up that will involve design, bicycling, and adventure. Around the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Sinead Rush. She's the Artistic Director of Creative Actor Training and Lead Acting Tutor at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London. And she'll be here to talk to us about their project Antigone Now and some other experimental projects, including a revisioning of Hamlet. Towards the end of the hour, we'll be joined by Jake Johnson. He's an associate instructor and grad student in the creative writing program here at UC Davis. He's not a fan of Brandon Sanderson. We'll find out why. And then at 5:55, Alex Ikuma will be dropping by the studio. Alex Ikuma is the Chaos Control Coordinator for Whole Earth Festival. There's been more chaos than usual this year with the Whole Earth Festival. We'll be talking about a move of about 150 yards of the Whole Earth Festival 2024. Mother's Day weekend is coming up. Have you made the purchases that you need to purchase? You can still support KDBS by checking out our swag. I know that KDBS swag is always appreciated in my house come Mother's Day. We're going to hear just a little bit more of John Schofield play the theme song of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. It's called A Go-Go. And then when we return, three guests to tell us about the bike scavenger hunt here at the University of California, Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back after this.